Well, here we are.
It is time, Simba.
If you understand that reference, you might be about the age where we should be working together. It's possible. But it is now one of 3 times a year that I'm accepting clients for my freedom framework, overcoming food sensitivities and increasing energy without unnecessary restriction. My goal for my one-on-one clients is to take them through frameworks and explore tools for achieving 50, 80, 90% of their goals in just a few months and show them how to continue to heal on their own so they don't need me anymore. Honestly, I think we're doing great one-on-one work here, helping women that would otherwise be falling through the cracks, thinking that they're just aging, that they're just moms, that they just, and it may be true that they just have stress, when really those stress hormones and their other core systems just really need some serious support and some serious love to serve them for years to come without symptoms. So if you'd like to clear inflammation, eczema, food sensitivities, or improve energy and brain clarity, I'd love to chat with you. You can book a call with me at kristabigler.com/FSS, kristabigler.com/FSS, and that link will be in the show notes. We try to treat all eczema exactly the same, and it is not all exactly the same. And so what we're doing is we need to listen to our clients, subcategorize the eczema, and realize that some of it may in fact react to certain foods and some of it may not, but can we correct this as the situation?
Stress is the inflammation that robs us of life, energy, and happiness. Our typical solutions for gut health and hormone balance have let a lot of us down. We're over-medicated and underserved. At The Less Stressed Life, we're a community of health-savvy women exploring solutions outside of our traditional Western medicine toolbox and training to raise the bar and change our stories. Each week, our hope is that you leave our sessions inspired to learn, grow, and share these stories to raise the bar in your life and home. Access to functional or specialized medicine testing and standard blood work is a big piece of personalizing care plans to help our clients succeed. But getting accounts with multiple labs and ordering and tracking results from many different web portals slows efficiency by bogging us down in admin work. This is why I'm completely obsessed with our podcast sponsor, Rupa Health. It's a single portal that allows you to order from over 20 specialty labs in one incredibly simple dashboard. I'm talking less than 30 seconds to set up your free account and about 30 seconds to order the labs you need. All the results are in one place and I can securely send clients their results with the click of a button. A big advantage for our clients is that standard blood work can be ordered for almost 2/3 less than other direct-to-consumer lab sites. Rupa is a lab concierge, so they send the lab invoices on your behalf if a client pays for their own labs. They help them get set up with a lab draw, navigate testing questions, and they provide the requisition forms. It's literally a dream. Go sign up for free to help streamline your practice and simplify ordering labs for your clients at rupahealth.com. That's rupahealth.com, and let them know I sent you when you sign up. You can also check out the show notes for this episode for a short video walkthrough of how I use Rupa Health in my own practice. All right. Today on The Less Stressed Life, we've got a little something different for you. So you might know that in my private practice, I work with gut issues, skin issues, and overcoming food sensitivities and helping women that feel tired and exhausted. But last week, after guessing on 3 other podcasts all about eczema, I realized that I don't think we've done an eczema 101. We have some really advanced eczema topics, but if someone was just kind of curious and understanding what are some of the root causes behind eczema, how do we treat it, et cetera, I realized that for you, my favorite people, the listeners of Less Stress Life, we haven't really given you that. So today I'm welcoming my co-practitioner at the Less Stress Life Nutrition Practice, Becky Santiago. Becky is a registered nurse that previously worked in the hospital and in school settings. We worked together years ago on her own skin and autoimmune struggles. And now full circle, she's a really amazing provider that brings calm and compassion to serving our one-on-one clients at the Less Stress Life. I am so thankful for her presence in my practice and the help that she gives our clients. And she has been so gracious to interview me for this topic today because it's more interesting in a conversation piece. So Becky, thanks so much for doing this for me and go ahead and take it away.
Thank you, Krista. Excited to be on this side of things and get to pick your brain as the eczema expert. So eczema affects so many people. It's about 31 million Americans. And I can attest to all the children it affects. It's about 20% of children. And I've seen it in the hospital and school setting. That number seems to be growing over the past year. So I'm excited to get all the details from you and really dig into how we can help people that might be suffering with eczema. So tell me what got you into this arena to begin with. What made you want to specialize in eczema?
I absolutely did not want to specialize in eczema because it's kind of a rough condition. There's not a lot of people who do specialize in it. Our toolbox is pretty shallow. And so I'm going to talk about specializing in it, and I'm going to add a question to our conversation. You said eczema seems to be rising, and I want to talk about what's going on in the society right now that may be increasing eczema overall. So let's talk about that next. But back to my story, it was probably 2015. Actually, it was really high school, way back when. That's what the first time I really remember having, or I remember experiencing eczema. And I, like, am a normal human being. So I thought, oh, this is probably genetic. My sister's also got this dry, scaly skin, you know, and eczema presents different ways, but they would also get this dry, scaly skin. Sometimes I thought, oh, it was really winter. We went to the dermatologist. They prescribed a couple of creams, Elidel, some different things. I really didn't use a lot for steroids, but because steroids actually thin your skin, years later, if I would use essential oils incorrectly, I'd burn my skin in the areas that I very short term use steroids, which is kind of interesting for me being on that. You know, there's some things you can't describe to people, right? Until you've experienced them or understand, mm-hmm. really. So I remember it being an issue in high school, but not like a, oh, this is just kind of an annoyance type thing, just kind of an annoyance. And that's how life is. If there's something just kind of annoying and you're not really driven to change it, you may not really think it's a big issue. And in retrospect, there were some other things that kind of made sense. But then fast forward, I was a mom of three kids. A couple of them were pretty young. I was contracting several jobs and I was just kind of getting started in private practice. So I guess there was probably a little bit of stress going on in addition to other things, because I would say most flares of things are a perfect storm. It's kind of how everything in autoimmunity is, right? It's like a perfect storm of all the things. And so really, since my eczema was traditionally a winter type of eczema, and it was kind of a scaly skin thing, it wasn't really an issue for me in the summer typically. And so one summer I was taking my kids to swimming lessons every day, and we would go swimming afterwards. So it was 5 or 7 days in the pool. And after that 5 or 7 days in the pool, I woke up one morning with like a raging rash, and it was in a really handy place, like around my eyes, on my neck. So, you know, I could totally hide it. Just kidding. It was like horrible. I would wake up and it would like hurt to move my face. It was very humbling and not something I wanted to talk about. Didn't really want to deal with it. I mean, it's easy to be very ashamed when something becomes very visual, right? I mean, why would I want to help people with that when I hated it on myself, right? Unfortunately, sure. I had to deal with it for quite a while, that flare, because I was looking for people to help me without success. Really, there's like a standardized, we can talk about that standardized toolbox. Like, what mm-hmm. does that look like? I got a generic toolbox of stuff. I'm not saying from an MD. I live in a place where medical access is not great. I've been to dermatologists. I can't even remember if I went to a dermatologist for it. I just don't remember. But I was checking with a lot of types of providers without a lot of success. Ultimately, you know, it did end as a happy ending, but it was a really bumpy ride. And I don't wish that upon anyone, because I was trying and failing a lot more than I would have liked to admit. I actually made myself a lot worse before I made myself better. And that is a common thing people say, that we kind of reject in our practice. Like, we don't want people to get worse before they get better. And so one thing I did was I accidentally over-restricted food, because I didn't realize what can happen sometimes in restriction and elimination diets of yesteryear, which are a really popular functional medicine approach of the last 10 to 15 years, but they have like merit. And then they also have times where it's not a good fit or people restrict too long. So after I kind of like dabbled, not knowing even what I was doing very well in an elimination diet, I actually made myself worse, to the point where if I would eat a handful of nuts, my eye would swell up. Not ideal. So it was an ugly ride, to say the least. I did a lot of PubMeding research around gut stuff. I did a lot of experimentation, and then I crawled out of the hole, and then I slowly got better. Infrared sauna was a big piece of my story. It wasn't an early part of my story, but it was quite an ugly journey. So I say that, you know, with like, if that's a hard story, I have not perfected that story. That's a hard thing from my history that I do not love. And it was not like I was out looking for clients in eczema. I didn't feel like that was a good fit for me after my own personal experience.
And so I was talking about food reactions or types of food reactions, probably in 2016 or 17 in a Facebook group of, for an eczema clothing company. And I had some moms approach me looking for help with their kiddos, and the rest is really history. We were very successful with those first couple of cases, and they referred their friends and they referred their friends. And before you know it, you just have a weird, intricate understanding of this problem that you also knew really well. And I've changed how we've addressed it and treated it over time, because that's what we always should do. That's no matter what you're doing with, no matter what kind of practitioner you see, if they're not learning and growing, it's not a good thing. So if I talk to you, let's say in 2018 or 2019, you should be
absolutely
different things in 2022.
Yeah, it's so tough when we experience something on our own, and especially a skin condition like eczema. And I know I've had my own skin challenges as well. What do you say as far as the emotional impact on visual diseases like eczema and so many other skin conditions have on people?
Well, what do you do besides have compassion, right? And do your best with things. And this is where shaming people with steroids doesn't work. So I hope no one ever feels shamed. Our goal is always to bring awareness to things. You know, what's supposed to happen with steroids specifically, which is kind of like the end of the toolbox. To be quite honest, there's not a lot going on. It's like you go, you get this for the most part. Sometimes there's an oral antibiotic. I mean, you have a lot of experience seeing providers for your skin issues too. So you could talk about the medical toolbox. You have a history, and actually, you know quite a bit about pharmaceuticals in general. And now we've got these new pharmaceuticals out, you know, and they're essentially biologics, which one, come with quite an expense. And two, you know, some of the recommendations are check your liver enzymes every 2 weeks. And that's when people start to get kind of alarmed. And my point around this was to start with steroids. What's supposed to happen with steroids is that, I mean, we just have to bring awareness, right? And so what's supposed to happen with steroids is that you use them for a couple of weeks, essentially, and titrate down and titrate off. And that education is not always being conducted, we've seen in the past. I hope it is now more so. But like a lot of meds, you know, some things are not supposed to be long-term. So yeah, the emotional piece is a very, very challenging, right? When you have a parent crying, I mean, really, like my brain is pretty clinical and pretty objective. So I'm like, let's get to work and work on this, but let's, you know, and this is where some things are non-negotiable. It's like, I really am an advocate for using steroids if it's going to help you sleep for a while, right? While we work on those root causes, while we calm those down. And I think there are topical opportunities to improve the itching and the scratching and whatnot that are, you know, maybe some out of the box thinking things that are just options. And also, like, the most frustrating thing with eczema is that it is a topical thing. We try to treat it topically, and it's got multiple angles. And I will speak to this really quickly, that I like to think we can go about every condition through a lens. So like if your issue is some XYZ, let me use this one because I think this works. So we've got three angles to a triangle, and there's an internal and nutritional part, right? There's an external part or structural part. And then there's also the emotional part, like you said. So if I've got a mom talking to me about her child's emotional outburst, she's already started with the most logical place. She's already gone to the counselor and kind of come up dry. She's already gone. A lot of times people will go to a chiropractor and have some subluxations put back in because that can affect the nervous system. And then maybe the last stop is she's going to check with me, right? Someone who deals with internal diet and nutrition. In a similar way with skin issues, we start with the most obvious. We start with that structural topical piece. That external piece, there's a huge emotional component. And actually, maybe we should talk about stress's impact on eczema. And then there's the whole nutritional piece. So we don't get out of talking about stress in practice. As you know, we've recently kind of talked about it. We've kind of like changed how we do talk about it because people disregard it. It's the less sexiest part of what we try to do in practice, but it's the part we can't ignore, unfortunately. And so there is a big piece of what stress does to us physiologically. And, you know, it's nervous system imbalances. And when your nervous system is out of balance, you are just paving neural pathways into this fight or flight, and you're not exercising the rest and digest side, which, by the way, is going to affect how you digest and absorb nutrients, which are essential for skin healing, for detoxification, for everything related to eczema. So it's pretty interesting. And another quick thought, just thinking about, you said earlier, eczema seems to be on the rise. Why is that? There's a lot of things, but just literally in these last couple of years with the up use of all of the alcohol hand sanitizers, we are disrupting the topical skin microbiome of the hands, right? So it's such a silly thing. It's like, of course, we should wash our hands and clean our hands, but we're using it in such a frequency that we're disrupting. We have a natural you know, bacterial balance, and we have a little phospholipid layer meant to be kind of antimicrobial and protect our skin. And we're kind of stripping it away like constantly over and over and over. So we naturally disrupt that skin microbiome and we're causing dry, flaky, irritated, you know, brashed out skin on our hands. Not only that, I think hand eczema, I've never seen it without coexistence of increase of stress. There's certain nutrients that stress will dump, and those are also implicated in hand eczema, interestingly enough. And that may be different for this year, but often we'll see hand eczema kind of as the last area that it pops up on the skin. It'll pop up in other places first, and then all of a sudden, then it gets worse on hands. And that's a really frustrating place. It's almost, it's kind of as bad as the face, you know, because you have to use your hands so much. It's very painful.
Sure, sure. And we have to wash our hands regularly, right?
Yeah.
So it's finding that balance of how am I washing my hands and what am I doing with my hands? Exactly. Exactly.
Sucks. Hand eczema sucks.
Yes. Yes. Any eczema sucks, right?
Yeah.
So earlier you said something about nutrients and dumping nutrients through stress. Well, we get our nutrients through food. So is there a food relationship with eczema? Are we reacting to certain foods because of the eczema or because of the food? How does that go? We had somebody ask on Instagram recently about that. I think food is triggering my eczema. What are your thoughts there?
Oh gosh, it's such a loaded question. I want to make it as easy as possible. So one thing that's kind of out there in the eczema community, so this is tricky. I told you in my own story that I would eat nuts and I would have my eye flare up. So first of all, let's be realistic. This is not normal, right? So this is not normal and it's not something, it's not an issue I'd always had. So should it be able to be corrected? Then the answer should be yes, right? If I am in an imbalanced state, that is not my destiny. Right. So I want to mention, I hope that laying that out first helps us kind of think rationally about things because we sometimes limit. It's like, could we tolerate food instead would be kind of our argument longer term. Okay. So in the eczema community and in the research, there is this phrase called leaky skin. And so essentially it's like the barrier topically is broken. And when it is broken, it is harder to heal and recover from because we're getting staff in and around, et cetera, et cetera. This is not some kind of mystical thing. Leaky gut or intestinal permeability is a thing in the research. Last time I searched PubMed, there was thousands of articles about it. So I would say if you're working with a provider and they don't know anything about it, it's like, well, are they doing continuing education? They looked at PubMed for sure. That because I think it is there actually. So not to be a downer on anybody, I respect all professionals, absolutely. But sometimes we need to listen to our clients better, which is a big thing. So when we're thinking about food reactions, there's an imbalance of some sort. Now, autoimmune conditions in general, which eczema does fall under that umbrella, they do respond more to adjusting food in the short term. But again, our goal is tolerance. So very simply, there's a lot of different types of food reactions that can happen. But is it a food reaction or a food digestion issue? And largely, food reactions or sensitivities are digestion type issues. So if you have gut imbalances, and gut imbalances are overgrowth of fungus or candida and bacteria and other nasty pathogens like H. pylori, those pathogens, all those gut pathogens feed on undigested things that we would like to eat. So if we're eating an apple, it's supposed to get digested. And then the micronutrients, you know, we use the macronutrients, the carbohydrates from that to use and make energy. We use the micronutrients in different processes in our body. So what bacterial overgrowths do is they do not allow digestive processes to happen like they're supposed to. They basically break things, you know? And so digestive processes don't happen. We have undigested stuff. It feeds the bad stuff. And then we have to deal with the byproducts of the bad stuff. So it's kind of like a weed. Let's just pretend, I mean, I am not anti-dandelion, but let's just call out a weed that we are all familiar with. So a weed in the lawn it consumes the food of the grass around it, right? So a weed is really like aggressive. It's stealing food from the bacteria that need it or the systems that need it. So it's stealing that water, that food, and it's giving off seeds or endotoxins in the bacterial world. So it's giving off these endotoxins, and that can look like in some bacteria give off endotoxins that upregulate certain neurotransmitters that are like high in certain classes of foods, and they cause reactions. Endotoxins can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause brain fog. In general, if we're not digesting food well, we can feel fatigued after we eat, right? So all of these are not shocking, but it's not as direct as I eat this food, I have a reaction. And so depending on what kind of provider you have, they may say, you know, there's a lot of approaches to this. Some providers are like, okay, cool, let's limit this for long term. And some providers would say, oh, there's no association with skin and eczema. And this goes back to a foundational issue with eczema treatment, is that we try to treat all eczema exactly the same, and it is not all exactly the same. And so what we're doing is we need to listen to our clients, subcategorize the eczema, and realize that some of it may in fact react to certain foods and some of it may not, but can we correct this as the situation? So I have this cookbook on eczema that came out at a really bad time, April 2020. Was it April 2020? The last 2 years are really like starting to feel really blurry. You just add a year to everything now. So anyway, that came out around that time. And there was an article, there was like a bajillion pages of research that I compiled for it that's available on one of our websites. But one of the comments I made on rationale for food issues with eczema was that literally just cleaning up and using less processed foods can be useful as well. And this is like a deep topic, right? There's a lot of avenues we can go down, but like in general, processed foods can be a little harder to digest, right? They're not kind of as nature intended them for them to be. So sometimes they don't have all the cofactors that our body might use to help with digestion. It's a very simple way to say it. So just like cleaning up the diet, not to like, you know, make some crazy statements here, but if you're reacting to foods, I would just step back and say, did you do that before? You know, so if you hadn't had that problem before, can it be fixed? The answer would be yes. You know, is what my opinion would be. Yes, you can react to eczema. The most common things are going to be gluten, dairy, the top 8 allergens, and then some other classes of foods. But here's the thing. I'm not a fan of like people drying this out forever. If you have an interest in experimenting with food, do it and move on, and don't let food create a lot of stress. I mean, we see that all the time, right? Like food is creating stress. People are trying to adhere to things that are unrealistic. And so for us, what we do in practice is we kind of do everything in one fell swoop if we're going to do anything around food. And also we listen really closely. If people are having certain food reactions, I'm like, you don't need to limit food. We just need to correct the gut imbalance that would create that type of food reaction. So there's like multiple different classes, I would say, of food reactions that can happen. And so in my brain, they make really clear sense, but I don't want to send people down a rabbit hole of like restriction, you know, as part of the conversation. So did that help? Did that make sense? Or do you want to recap that at all?
Sure. So it sounds like with eczema and autoimmune conditions alike, adjusting food can be a very positive thing, but what we don't want to do is get stuck and start restricting. We want to test and then move on. It worked or it didn't work. We want to stick to whole foods. And then you said something about digesting. How would one know whether or not they're digesting well?
Great question. Because the unfortunate part, this is actually kind of a challenging concept to grasp because we don't have x-ray vision in our guts. So if things look fine on the other side, then we're like, must be fine. I don't think I have any issues. You know, usually things are really bad if you are seeing it in your stool, or if your stool is, so the perfect stool is type 4 on the Bristol stool chart. It's like a banana, ideally 1 to 3 times per day. Ideally in the morning is a good time. So now you know your perfection as far as bowel movement. So some people that are, and we could talk about why things present on the skin in the first place, but one of them is because it's a method of elimination. So if someone is not pooping every day, cool. Step number one, you know, you got some gut issues. If you are having loose stools, or if it's like constipated some days, loose stools other days, there's room for improvement here in the gut. I like people to come to us and know and understand that there's a gut relationship with food, because if you are not digesting food well, it may look like eczema on the outside, but that doesn't totally like bridge together in people's heads if they don't see undigested food in the stool. And with babies, it's a little tricky because their digestive systems are not super advanced. They're kind of transitioning quite a bit those first 3 years of life. So it's a little bit trickier with them. And so really we use gut testing and we look at intestinal markers to get a good feel for if you're making enzymes well in your gut. And usually if you have a lot of bacterial imbalances, which is, I feel, an epidemic of our nation and of our world now. And I'm pretty biased about that. And that's okay. I can say my biases. So I feel like that's, you know, a pretty significant epidemic. We can prove that with testing and then address appropriately, like rebalance microbiota, support the body to make its own enzymes, and voila, we work again.
Wonderful. So you just answered like three of my upcoming questions. It sounds like, if I'm hearing you right, your approach at Less Stress Life is looking at treating from the inside out with eczema, looking at the gut microbiome while paying attention to what's going on externally, of course. But you repeatedly say stuff about the GI tract and the microbiome and what's going on there and eczema. So for those that don't know, can you just clarify? You're saying that there is absolutely a connection between the two and what you've seen.
Oh, absolutely. And let me give you an example. Well, earlier I was talking about having certain bacterial overgrowths and I was using a dandelion as an example, but there's this bacterial overgrowth. And so here's the tricky part. One is you can't necessarily get this information from all providers. Like we do not have, we don't have a universal system for assessing and addressing this. So I apologize in advance. This is where we are right now. Whatever. Yep. Like
in all skin conditions, I'll throw that out there. Having been through this myself, it's all skin.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have a universal system for assessing and addressing, I would say. And so we use what we think works really well. So when I say like a Klebsiella overgrowth, I don't know that you can go to your provider and say, can you test my gut to look for this? Like, I don't know if that is in that person's toolbox or they have knowledge about that. And, you know, just so you know, you're not going to get the same answer from other people. And some people go out and they buy random stool tests and they don't know how to interpret it really, or they didn't have someone who knew what they were doing to interpret it. And so sometimes we can actually use some of that data. So I just like to mention that because those are actually common problems we see now. So I'd like to just mention that. So on testing, I can see Klebsiella overgrowth, and Klebsiella, one of those toxins or kind of like the seeds of dandelion lets go, is histamine. And so it'll upregulate that, which like is a neurotransmitter our body should be able to digest and eliminate. And people are kind of generally familiar with this because of antihistamines with allergy stuff. So eczema, by the way, is part of the allergic or atopic march, along with asthma and allergies. And so if you have a baby, if you're a baby and you have eczema, you might grow up and have asthma or allergies. It is part of this whole histamine IgE mediated mast cell thing that happens in our immune system, and we can improve it. But other things we see on gut tests, like bar none, is, so let's back up. In the eczema community in general, like in research, we believe that Staphylococcus aureus overgrowth, a type of bacteria, is commonly overgrown on the skin. So I was talking earlier about hand sanitizer disrupting the topical skin microbiota, because if you just kill, if you just spray killer on your grass, what grows back first? Weeds, right? That's the easiest way to say it. You kill all the grass and the weeds grow back. So that kind of happens with this hand sanitizer. It's possible for it to happen, right? We're just killing, you know, when there's positive and negative there, and we're allowing then the negative to overgrow. So what happens is that we have staph topically, and not all skin is all staph dominant. I would say not all rashes are the same. This is why people get frustrated when there's like one blanket recommendation. They're like, well, that didn't work for me. I'm like, you probably don't have staph dominant eczema, but a lot of people do. It looks red, spotted, numular, round, and melanated skin. It looks darker. So if you've got topical staph overgrowth, one thing that's negative that can be happening with itching, which is why we want to kind of stop the itch if we can. And if we need to use steroids short term, cool. Because if you're itching like on the inside, I love how like when I'm doing interviews, I'm acting things out. I'm pretending to scratch the inside of my elbow right now, a common place for this type of eczema. And so then you scratch somewhere else and now you're translocating or moving staph bacteria from here to there. So we know that. That's like well known. Now, what about the inside of the body? So if we have staph overgrowth going on the inside or outside, guess what we see? Guess what we see on gut tests on the inside, Becky, for $1,000 on Wheel of Fortune. Is that the right game? I don't know. Anyway, guess what we see on the inside? And you can fill this in. You know,
we see
overgrowth of staph and strep. So fun clinical pearl that I learned the hard way is that if you have a predisposition to being able to have eczema, which we could talk about, if you have a predisposition to having eczema and you clear it, you could get it again. You could, because all the things that kind of go together to create that flare could happen again. And one of a sneaky, annoying way, you can have a staph and strep overgrowth and it may not be getting out of the body well and showing up on your skin, is you get a head cold. You get a head cold and you have sinus infection, you have staph and strep overgrowth. And guess what happens? This was a profound thing when I realized this in clients. And actually when I was recovering myself, you get sick 3 or 4 weeks later, you get a little tiny spot of eczema or flare. It's like, Why would this happen? Well, we had this staph and strep overgrowth. Our body hasn't been able to clear it out yet. If it's going to do it, sometimes it gets worse. Sometimes our body clears it out. It kind of depends on what, how we're nourishing it and all the opportunities, right? It's kind of hypothetical, right? Gray area. Mm-hmm. So if we have that staph and strep overgrowth from a sinus infection, several weeks later, it might show up on the skin if we're not in the clear yet. If it ends up being more overgrowth that's on the inside, and we kind of generally look okay. You know, when you're sick, you got 1 week of feeling like poop, and then you have a next week where you're like, I'm fine, but you really still don't feel awesome. And then the skin grows from the inside out. So that 5 minutes right there was just me saying, hey, on gut tests, almost all of the time we see the overgrowth on the inside that we know is an overgrowth on the outside.
Sure. Sure. So you look at information like the staph overgrowth on a GI map. Is that what you said?
Yeah, we use the GI map. We have used other tests. I've not liked them as well. There was another test I was excited about, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's so much. Let me just tell you, I worked with this like semi-famous guy during my eczema challenge, who I do not, I somewhat resent a little bit, because he told me, he had me do multiple GI tests. And in retrospect, they're not good. He now uses actually the same test we use, because he's kind of a public figure and talks about it. So he had me do multiple tests. They were non-remarkable. I didn't know how to read them way back then. So they were not remarkable. And he's like, well, you could do nothing, which is usually when I'm like, bye. You know, like I clearly am not okay. So like, if you don't find something here, that's not a thing. So I just say there's different sensitivity of tests, and that's true in conventional testing and functional world testing. So there's a lot of companies that offer tests. I found one that I think works well. And I also think that listening to client experiences and their stories is more valuable or more valuable than what shows up on the test. So yes, that's the test we use. And we do occasionally add on a different test, like a one that is in Scottsdale, where people kind of go through things with a microscope if we feel like we need to look at some additional markers. Very rarely, but sometimes we use that. And I mean, we're always testing things, but a lot of times they don't pass.
Sure. Understood. And one of our followers on social media asked, is it true that you have to treat the skin as the same time as the gut? So I guess externally and internally in sync together.
Well, I will say that if you are severely inflamed, we always ask for pictures when we're working on skin cases, because if you can't see it and you don't see the changes, like if you're not tracking that, it's one challenging, you know, because you need to be able to celebrate positives. If I see a picture, they really are worth 1,000 words. But my point is that if it's really quite severe and all over the place, sometimes you have like a staph infection. I know we said people have staph overgrowth, but there's like, it's downright infected and it's like oozing and hot to the touch. And at that point, you really do need to fix the infection before you can address it from the inside. So I guess to me, like question was interesting, but it's like, well, if the skin grows from the inside out, of course we need both, right? And this is actually, right. I think, you know, one of the most frustrating things about working with eczema is that we'd all like it to be simple, right? It's like, logically, we're going to try a topical, and then we're going to say we've tried everything because we've tried everything topically. And then that means we've tried 1/3 of some of the options, you know, is what it means to me.
Right.
And so I think the reason there's not a lot of practitioners specializing in it, I think it's on purpose. I think it's because it can be fast or slow, depending on the type or the style and the approach and how efficient and good the approach is. So I think all of those things matter. And I think it's double the work because it's an internal and an external job.
Yeah. It's a huge undertaking and a big challenge, but seeing rewards is super great too, right? Your patient heals, when the client gets better. And I think of this as a parent with a child who had eczema. And that brings us to our next question that we got was, how is this different for the pediatric population? And what would you tell a parent? Like, what can they do to help their child with eczema?
Well, I mean, this is loaded, right? This is a whole episode, which we could probably do. And so the other thing, so aside from there not being a lot of people specializing in eczema, you know, at least in my network, I don't know a lot of people who specialize in peds, right? And I think the thing for pediatrics is, if you have children, you understand the challenges of that. Like, how do you get kids to do X, Y, Z thing? So we like 5 and under, because once you're over 5, you have your own ideas about things for quite a while until you're an adult and you can appreciate everything your parents did for you instead. Whereas when you're under 5, your parents are a bit more in control of that. So I always like to pull apart human behavior without shame and say, these are our human behaviors. So if we want success, we need to acknowledge human behaviors and try to overcome stereotypes. You know, it's kind of like why we don't try to work with many men, because stereotypically, they don't think that they have problems that wives identify as problems, right? So with kids, the biggest criteria is an awesome parent, an open-minded, good mindset parent, because they're the ones who will ultimately have to direct this. And ultimately, what ends up happening in our practice is we help mom and baby. So we love when we get to look at gut testing on both moms, breastfeeding moms and babies. There's a lot of similarities. There's usually, when we're talking about pediatrics, there's a shorter timeline. A lot of times there's antibiotics or something going on at birth. Sometimes there's not. You know, a long time ago, like many years ago, I did a group program for kids with that eczema clothing company way back in the beginning of my story. And we attracted pretty severe cases of eczema to that group program. And one thing that was really interesting, again, not in research, but just interesting in their histories as they wrote up their histories for me, was that a lot of those kids had jaundice, which I thought was pretty interesting. And so jaundice is like, you know, a little under evolved liver function, and it's going to clear out essentially, right? And so that's kind of like reminds me so much of how eczema can be. It's like things are not functioning optimally. And so we're not clearing things. And so a safe place for things to show up is on the skin. So I'm not exactly directly answering your question. My point is that a lot of kids have, I feel, somewhat straightforward cases. I don't know if that's fair for me to say, but I prefer working on, you know, kids under, sometimes I prefer that, or the types I like those spotted eczema cases. There's often stuff in that history. Often the parents have had a history of eczema, allergies, or asthma, right? That helps with the genetic component that allows this to become an issue. Sometimes this is very mild, right? And it'll resolve if you use different moisturizers or you don't overwash and disrupt the topical skin microbiome. So we always want to start simple, right? There's a brand we partner with, I won't mention their name, but I keep it pretty simple with topicals. But if people can use a topical and have success, then obviously, you know, we're rooting for you, right? Just know that I think the message to everyone and to moms with babies is that there are a lot of options. So, you know, make sure you take an inventory or catalog, like all of the cofactor symptoms that are going on with your child. You know, how do the bowel movements seem? Do they have trouble sleeping? Do they seem like they're scratchy? I mean, there's a lot of opportunity to improve. I guess it's just such a loaded topic, I guess. You know, sure. And we could certainly do a whole episode. If people want to submit questions about child eczema, we'd love to talk through them.
Wonderful. And it sounds like a whole person approach. Either way, adult or child, we're going to look at the whole system and the whole picture of what's going on, which really I think is where you see successes in any condition.
And you just adjust it to that little person's size, right? And I think a lot of people are uncomfortable working with kids because there's not there's just in general with some of the things we do, there's somewhat limited research, but we can feel pretty comfortable when we've done things many times and really there is no harm. So our goal is always like good intentions, rebalancing, helping everything work optimally. But with kids, it's like, I don't think we do much for standardized protocols anyway. We're pretty personalized, but with kids, it's even more so that because every kid is a different size and has a different severity. And so we just adjust until we get it just right. That's really the secret sauce with kids. Adjust until you get it right and make sure everyone's comfortable. The end.
Right. That's wonderful. Now, two last questions that we got from social media, people were dying to know, and it came up several times, was around creams. And you just mentioned it, some things to soothe. What things would you recommend? We had a little discussion on steroids in the beginning, and we know that's the traditional way that they're treated from the dermatologist, from your PCP, wherever you start out, usually it's going to be a steroid. What kind of creams would you recommend?
Yeah. So let's again stop and think about human behavior and then change that, because the human behavior is desperation from eczema and reaction. So we buy a lot of stuff, like literally you're up in the middle of the night buying more stuff. And so you have a whole graveyard or closet full of stuff, closet full of creams, and you just kind of like cycle through them as quickly as possible to try to see, okay, that one didn't work. That one didn't work. That one didn't work. And so one of the challenges with eczema is that it can be fast or slow. And so you don't really know if it worked or if it didn't work. If you don't give it a good college try, you also don't know if it worked if you're using a lot of things at once. You also don't know if you're reacting to an ingredient, if you're using a lot of things at once, or if you're rotating around too much. So I say, keep it simple and stick to like single ingredient things that could be oils to seal the skin moisture or barrier in. Use the same thing for at least 1 to 2 weeks and then rotate, because maybe you don't realize that you're starting to react the oatmeal into a thing. If you use one thing forever or long-term, you can actually start to create a sensitivity if you're not actively balancing things on the inside or calming the immune system, so to speak. You can actually start to just react to all kinds of goofy things. So keep it changing, but not so often. So very clearly, single ingredient oils. Usually you layer from like kind of drippiest to thickest. So you can use a single oil, olive oil, jojoba oil, lots of different things. I think castor oil topically is kind of nice. It will quell the itch for several hours actually, but it's kind of a top layer one. Maybe put another one on at first. But in general, whatever you do, try to stick to it long enough and pay attention and like take some pictures. Stick to it for like 1 or 2 weeks. Because if you're constantly changing, you feel like you're doing lots of things, but really you're not separating and kind of being a scientist about it. And unfortunately, we do have to separate some emotions from objectivity, which is the hardest thing because it's very emotionally stigmatizing. And as if our sleep is challenged, before you know it, we're just crying all day, right? You know, those are severe situations, but we've seen them. So I would say keep it really simple and rotate single ingredient things. That would be something people are not usually doing. And I think it like you have stuff in your cupboard you can try. There is a little bit of discord around coconut oil, so I'll just mention it. It's got some antifungal properties in it. So if you use that kind of constantly, sometimes it can be useful on certain things. Like cradle cap is often fungal mediated, but if you are using that constantly, it's not actually very moisturizing and it could disrupt. And so you could potentially try it short term, but I wouldn't make it your always go to all the time. Like for some people, it can make it worse actually.
Sure. So keep it simple, be patient and objective. Mm-hmm. Take your time. Yeah. Check it out one by one. Wonderful. Any last tips or recommendations that you have with people suffering from eczema or parents with kids that are suffering?
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is to take inventory. So something you can do today is to write down the history in bullet point form. When did it start? When did it get worse? When does it get better? These are all clues on the root causes. And if you're not able to see kind of the relationships, you might be able to talk to someone else who can see the relationships. Is it worse during ovulation, periods, after periods of stress? Did it start in college, after kids? All of these things. Then, you know, if you're interested in food stuff, you can document around diet first before you do anything there. So just all about documentation. And so you can document and then kind of decide on an action plan and kind of set a time frame around it. So if you're going to do an action plan, you know, think about things in 2 week segments, I would say. If you don't know where to go, I mean, there's not a ton of practitioners, but you certainly can start somewhere. But I think when we record and keep a little bit of data, like, you know, I was trying to remember when the book came out, right? Like, human behavior does not keep track of what we ate yesterday, to be honest. So if we don't really have that down, we can't make objective decisions about whether something's working, not working. Or when we write things down, and this happens to me as a practitioner, when I kind of like take inventory of things, sometimes you see things you have never seen before. So that is something that costs you $0 and you can start today.
So true. Be data focused, take inventory, document your diet, and come up with an action plan. I love it. Any last thoughts? Anything else?
Well, if you do that, and then if you, you know, want to work with someone or even going, I think anytime someone's got a complicated history, having a bullet point one pager, if they're seeing different providers of any type, if you come with that, you are like many light years ahead.
Steps ahead, right? We love that.
You're steps ahead. And, you know, if you think about an average provider visit, right? If you go into the MD and you get 15 minutes, they don't usually have time to collect your entire history. And then we sometimes get mad because someone didn't listen to us. Well, just make it easier when the reality is you're not getting it a lot of time. So bullet point it out, be clear, and you can use that. You can rinse and repeat that like again and again. So I don't care if you have eczema or not. I think that's a good practice to have if you've got some stuff going on or things people should know about.
Absolutely. Never go wrong with organization when you go into a practitioner of any kind, for sure. Krista, thanks so much for sharing all of your knowledge about eczema today.
Yeah. And if you need a new next step, the next step from us is at this time, we have this website called eczemanutritionist.com. And really, we've kind of tried to put a lot of resources there, but we've got a quiz and it kind of gives you where the probable root cause of your eczema is coming from and some potential first steps. And if you can't find someone to help you, we're happy to help you over at Less Stress Life Nutrition. Thanks so much for listening today.
Sharing and reviewing this podcast is the best way to help us succeed with our mission to help integrate the best of East and West and empower you to raise the bar on your health story. Just go to reviewthispodcast.com/less-stressed-life. That's reviewthispodcast.com/less-stressed-life. And you'll be taken directly to a page where you can insert your review and hit post.